While most of Michigan and the country were out celebrating on New Year's Eve, a northern Michigan man was lying in the snow, paralyzed, after he slipped and fell, but his faithful dog saved his life. The man, known only as Bob, was watching football on New Year's Eve and waiting to watch the ball drop. When his game went to a commercial, he ran out to get some wood for his fire. He was wearing only long johns, slippers, and a shirt for the 15-foot walk. Suddenly, he slipped, fell. He broke his neck. He doesn't have any close neighbors, so when he was yelling for help, the only help he got was his best friend, Kelsey, his golden retriever. While the temperatures dropped to 24 degrees at night, there was Bob lying in the snow, Kelsey by his side. He said she slept right next to him, kept him warm all night. She licked his face and hands to keep him awake. Eventually, a neighbor out there in the area did hear him, and he's saved. What an amazing story. But I got to tell you, using the power of the mind to overcome things like pain, we're going to be talking with Dr. David Hanscom in just a moment. His book, Back in Control, next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Dr. David Hanscom is a leading orthopedic spine surgeon at the Swedish Neuroscience Institute in Seattle. Now, he believes that surgery and medication have a role, and he knows that these standard courses of treatment aren't what's needed to always treat chronic pain. Instead, he provides a framework so the patient can find his or her solution, allowing them to live pain-free forever. It's an amazing story. David, welcome to the program. Welcome back, I should say. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a long time. We've done this. This is our third time, and it's been 4 years, over 4 years. But, yeah, it's great.
Do you get a pretty good response every time you're on?
I do. It's the best response I get, actually.
Oh, that is fantastic.
there's a problem is that, you know, people in chronic pain don't sleep very well.
That's right. They're up listening.
They are. It's a problem. I'm glad you have a great show to listen to, but I feel sorry about their sleep.
Explain chronic pain.
Well, the last 5 years since I talked to you, there's been just an explosion of neuroscience research showing that within about 3 to 6 months that the brain simply memorizes impulses, such as pain impulses. And once they're memorized by the brain, it doesn't matter where the pain starts. It could be any part of the body. It can be soft tissue. It can be broken bones. It can be bone spurs. It doesn't really matter where the pain starts. But if it's sustained at all, the brain eventually picks up the impulses and memorizes them, just like an athlete learns a new skill. Once they're memorized, they're permanent. It's like riding a bicycle, and you cannot unlearn those. So it's called, the recent review literature says it's a maladaptive neurological disease.
When it was created like that, I mean, how'd they come up with a name like that?
Well, I don't know. So the bottom line is, you simply learn the pain like an athlete learns a skill. And, of course, what we call motor memory is actually, or muscle memory is actually neurological memory. Your brain lays a substance called myelin down. It's like the insulation on a wire. And with repetition, that myelin becomes very, very thick. And then, of course, it gets ingrained. And then it's like once you turn a light switch on, as long as the light switch is on, the light's on. Same thing, as long as the pain switch is on, the pain is on. And, of course, the pain is not in your head. It's where the body part is. So there's a certain part of the brain that goes to the low back, for instance, or goes to the knee, and that switch gets turned on and it stays on. In other words, essentially short circuits.
What percent of the people out there, doctor, are living with chronic pain? Lots.
Well, tough question. I mean, it's quoted about 116 million people. I actually think it's higher, but there's at least 1 out of 3 adults has chronic pain. What's disturbing is that the incidence of chronic pain in adolescents has gone up over 800% in about 7 years.
Wow.
Tremendous surge in chronic pain in adolescents. And I gave a lecture at a high school about a year ago, and out of 1,500 students, there were over 350 of them on medications for chronic disease in high school.
How many of them, those people on chronic pain, is it related to back issues?
Well, back pain is number one. By the way, knee pain is number two. But it's all sorts of stuff. It's irritable bowel, migraine headaches, spastic bladder, et cetera. So the chronic symptoms can occur in any part of the body. As far as musculoskeletal, by far and away, back pain is the most common.
Okay, let's get into some of the things that you have done. Of course, you have done surgeries on people. It sounds like you prefer not to have to do that.
Well, as a physician, I mean, the most rewarding thing I can do is if you're my patient and you've been in pain for 20, 30 years, and I used to do surgery in the situation, I'm one of the few surgeons who's been on both sides of this fence. So I spent my first 8 years of practice doing aggressive surgery. I did dozens and dozens of surgery for back pain. Then the data came out in 1993 that the success rate is only 25%. Then even a better paper came out in 2006 showing that the success rate was only 24%, and I just stopped. I said, whatever needs to be done for back pain, it wasn't this. And I'm still watching. I still have yet to see a paper that actually shows a success rate that's particularly strong for back fusion for back pain. Now, I know some of the listeners have had back surgery. They've had a back fusion. They've had a successful outcome, which is great. It's not like it never works. But from my perspective, having an operation that's that extensive work only 1 out of 4 times is just not acceptable. So I quit doing those.
Tell us about the book, Back in Control, and you spell back B-A-C with the K backward. I like that.
Right. Well, I did not learn any of this in medical school, residency, or fellowship, and I started working with rehab doctors my first 10 years in practice, and I slowly realized with the physiatrists, physical medicine, and rehab doctors that they were working on sleep and stress, stretching, strengthening, all sorts of stuff. And then when I did the surgery, why people did better. They just simply were prepared for the surgery. Then I had chronic pain myself for 15 years. That was pretty extreme, particularly the last 7 years was unbelievable. And what happens, I started in 1988 having some sweating during surgery. And what happens is that my nervous system basically short-circuited. I went through horrible burnout, anxiety, depression. I developed over 16 symptoms of what happens when your nervous system is full of adrenaline. So I had migraine headaches, I had tinnitus ringing in my ears, burning in my feet, I had back pain, neck pain, developed these obsessive thought patterns, extreme anxiety, extreme depression. It was horrible. So I did not know how it happened, and I did not know how I came out of it. And in 2003, I sort of by pure luck found some tools that started the process out. And by about 2006, 2007, why I had a pretty good idea what had happened, then I heard a lecture by Dr. Howard Schubinard at Detroit in 2011 that just put the whole thing together. Then I wrote the first book in 2012. Then the new book that was published about 6 weeks ago is a much different book in that I know the neuroscience now. There are hundreds and hundreds of neuroscience papers right now that document the neurological nature of chronic pain, which I did not know on my first book.
Now you talk about the mind, and what does the mind have to do with helping to fight chronic pain?
Well, basically, I view the mind as somewhat of a junction box. In other words, the way living creatures exist on this planet is we have all the sensory input, sight, touch, sound, feel, etc. So our brain processes those impulses, and then if they're pleasant impulses, symphony, warm beach, etc., the body secretes chemicals like dopamine, oxytocin, drugs that are like Valium, then you feel relaxed. But when you feel relaxed, you're just feeling the chemical surge. Same thing, bright lights, loud sounds, etc., cause chemicals like adrenaline and cortisol, then you feel anxious. So it turns out that anxiety is just a chemical surge. It's not primarily psychological. Humans have a problem in that we have thoughts do the same thing. Pleasant thoughts give you positive chemicals and you feel relaxed. Unpleasant thoughts give you adrenaline and cortisol and you feel anxiety. But again, the anxiety is a chemical surge. It's not primarily psychological. Every living creature has some type of anxiety avoidance response. The problem that humans have compared to other animals is that you cannot escape your thoughts. So what happens if you experience them, over time they become stronger. If you suppress them, they become even stronger. Then, of course, masking works a little bit, but not really. So whether you suffer, suppress, or mask, as you get older in repetition, these circuits become stronger and stronger, and then you end up with a continuously adrenalized nervous system. And then what happened as far as pain, so you had a back injury at age 20, not a big deal, a few weeks is gone. But by age 40, 45, when these circuits are fired up, you now plug a different body part in, whether it's your toe or your foot or your knee or your back. And the same circuits in the brain are fired up with your thoughts as they are the other sensory input. Then when your body's full of adrenaline, it increases the conduction of the nerves in the animal studies, and you feel the pain even more. And then you feel more pain, more adrenaline, your body becomes more and more sensitized, and it's a huge problem.
David, when the people get back surgery, sometimes they don't get better. Why not?
Well, again, I did not know this when I talked to you before, but if you're doing a structural operation for a neurological problem, it just cannot work. We say some people, it depends on the surgery. For instance, I do surgery. So if you have a bone spur causing pain on the side of your leg, called sciatica, and I take away that bone spur, it's like going to the dentist with a cavity, you fix the cavity.
That's right. And that's an easy fix, right?
Right. It works well. And I'm excited to do that. I'm happy to offer that option for people. And I do a lot of that. I'm a very busy spine surgeon. But we have back pain. Again, back pain is a muscular problem. People are told they have degenerative disc disease. Well, actually, it's not a disease. It's simply part of the aging process.
Pounding, right?
Right, but it's actually been shown in research to not be the cause of pain. So we're doing these huge operations for a structure that has actually been shown not to be cause of back pain. So that's why success rate's about 20-25%.
That's pretty low.
It's horrible.
Jeez.
Now, what's happened for me is that this is my 30th year doing spine surgery, and the problem with the spine fusion, it's a very large operation, a lot of pain with the surgery, there's tissue trauma, but you've now taken two of your vertebrae, you've welded them together, it's like putting a rock in the middle of a stream. So you have stress above and below that fusion, and it starts to break down. So a significant part of my practice is people who have had surgery after surgery after surgery, where the spine keeps breaking down. But I have one gentleman who's had 28 operations in 20 years. Another gentleman had 18 operations in about 48 months. So it's not uncommon that people have breakdown after breakdown after breakdown, whereas if they had not had that first operation, that spine never would have broken down.
Do you find that people who lose weight because they were excessive relieve pressure on the spine?
You know, people talk about that a lot. I've actually not found that by itself to be an issue. I think what's more important is to actually get in physical condition. In other words, your muscle tone is up. It puts tension on your, or compression on your abdominal contents and supports your spine. So losing weight by itself has actually not been a great thing to do for back pain. It actually causes a bit of stress and actually tends to make pain a little bit worse. So the weight eventually comes off on its own as people start to feel better. The part that I'm excited about the last 5 years is that we've watched hundreds of patients go pain-free without surgery, not with surgery. And once you get the diagnosis correct, it's an incredibly solvable problem. So one of my friends, the colleague who does this with me, just delayed his retirement by about 2 years because he's having such a great time with this. It's been a remarkable experience for me as a surgeon.
And what are some of the techniques to get somebody in that mode to get out of that chronic pain?
Well, there's three parts, and that's why I eventually wrote the book. It was too hard to explain in clinic. But basically, you have to understand chronic pain. It's a neurological problem, not a structural problem. Also, the body's chemistry is a big deal. The second thing is there's always multiple factors that affect pain. So, for instance, number one is sleep. Lack of sleep is a huge problem. So, but there's sleep, there's stress, there's physical conditioning, there's diet, there's exercise, your life outlook, whether you're constantly frustrated versus joyful. And all those things change your body chemistry. So then the third part of it is to take control of your own care. So once you understand the problem, you start addressing every issue at the same time. There's never one answer at a time. And you take control. Probably 90 to 95% of people eventually get better.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, I'm just flabbergasted. I had a gentleman last week who had been in chronic pain since 1995. I've actually done two back surgeries on him, which solved the leg pain. But he still had back pain, wasn't sleeping, and wasn't doing very well. By the way, when I do surgery, on a given patient. I say, look, I can help your leg pain or I can help your arm pain, but I'm not going to help your neck pain or your back pain. It just doesn't work. And I know hope springs eternal, but back pain just does not go away with back surgery. So this gentleman had two operations, and he had read the book and worked through the tools. And, you know, he'd done reasonably well and went up and down and up and down. And he came in about 6 weeks ago and just wasn't doing well. And I said, look, you either could figure this out or not. He reread the book. He jumped into some of the tools. And I was able to get a phone call from him that he's pain-free. He's been pain-free for the first time in 20 years.
Isn't that dramatic?
Oh, it's exciting.
No, but you've got to feel great about that as a doctor.
Yeah, a gentleman 2 days ago has been chronic pain since 1980. And we're just starting the process. But once you understand the problem and the solution, it's just not very hard. Plus, it's self-directed. You don't have to have a big pain clinic to do this. So I hate to sound like a salesman here, and I really am trying not to be, but my goodness, these people, it's so rewarding to take somebody who has no hope, and you show them the roadmap. In other words, my book is not the solution. Like you said before, it's just a framework. Once people understand the framework and they can organize their thinking around the variables, they can figure it out on their own. And of course, logically, everybody is different. Your life is totally different than mine and the next person. So each person knows how to apply the tools to their own life. So doctors, almost by definition, we sort of know whatever field you're in, you can't really fix somebody else, but you can generally make some differences in your own life. So once you understand the problem and understand the solution, then you apply the principles to your own situation, it really is just a matter of time.
What do you think of, some of these surgeries on the spine with lasers? Do you do that? Do you use that too?
You know, I've been trying to do minimally invasive surgery, and I can respect any surgeon who decides to do a given technique. In other words, you want your surgeon to be comfortable with his specific technique. So for instance, I made a choice about 20 years ago not to do minimally invasive surgery, but there's also some very, very good minimally invasive surgeons who do a nice job. Then the laser stuff, I honestly don't know. Generally, my feeling has been that it's still surgery. So whether it's open or minimally invasive or laser, you're still cutting tissue, you're still taking away bone spurs. So it's still surgery. Just whatever your surgeon's comfortable with doing, I think that's really the critical key factor.
We have a lot of truck drivers, doctor, that listen to this program. They're sitting a lot. They're in their trucks. They're in their cabs, driving all over the country, you know, keeping America moving.
Right.
That constant sitting like that, does that hurt the spine?
Yeah, it does. They did a study in the 60s, which they never could get away with now, but they took a bunch of medical students, and they put needles into their back, and they put needles right into the disc. Then they measured the disc pressure when they were sitting, standing, and lying down. And the highest disc pressure was with sitting. And the problem with sitting is that your stomach muscles aren't firing. When you're standing and walking while your trunk core muscles are firing, they're squeezing on your abdominal contents and helping support your spine. So when you're sitting, particularly sitting and bending over, it puts a lot of stress on your back.
When you started revising this book, Back in Control, because originally, you know, you didn't have all the information that you have now. What was it that really got you into this? Think about that. We're going to hit a break, but we're going to come back in a moment with Dr. David Henscom, MD, of course, Back in Control. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines. I want to see how you deal with chronic pain. We'll be back. And welcome back with Dr. David Henscom, his book, Back in Control. Underneath it, it says a surgeon's roadmap out of chronic pain. What would you say, doctor, might be the greatest story that you can think of where the mind took care of chronic pain?
Well, in the foreword of my book, there's a friend of mine, Mark Owens, who was in Africa for 23 years, working on saving elephants. A remarkable story, tough, tough guy. He only left Africa after his third assassination attempt by the poachers. About 10 years before I saw him, he had taken a fall from a horse, fractured his ribs, fractured his spine. He had rods put in his back over 8 levels, and then developed extreme chronic pain. When I saw him, two surgeons had recommended 12 hours of surgery, to fuse his spine from his neck to his pelvis. And he came to me for a third opinion. I said, look, spine looks fine. I don't see anything to operate on. He started these simple writing exercises, which I talk about all through my book. And within 3 days, he's about 80% pain-free. And by 6 weeks, he's back riding his horse. I just saw him about 6 weeks ago. He was in the high country pulling his horse through 2 feet of snow and doing just fine. No pain, no meds.
What if you're not a believer? Are you gonna be able to fight your chronic pain?
Well, nobody's a believer. I say, look, you know, the whole key here is not about positive thinking. It's not about believing or not believing. Everybody does this differently. I say, look, just simply start using the tools that literally rewire the nervous system and just see what happens. So I actually ask people to express their skepticism, be skeptical, because if you're skeptical and sort of suppress it and mask it, it actually fires up your nervous system, right? So what you're trying to do is actually let go and sort of let a process take place. And I'm not attached to the knowledge right this second. I mean, it keeps changing. I mean, this book's changed dramatically in 3 years. And it's an ongoing process. We're learning stuff all the time. There's new MRI scan research that shows that they can directly change brains with deep brain stimulation, with magnetic testing. You can do it with better sleep, these writing exercises, et cetera. So there's lots of things that work. And the book is just a framework to organize your thinking around a complex topic. So, yeah, you can believe almost anything you want as long as you start progressing forward. And, again, the third part of this process is people can take control of their own care. So at some point you learn something, look at it, you believe it or not, then you start moving forward.
David, with chronic pain, of course, comes a lot of people using pharmaceutical pain pills, which I find devastating.
Right.
This helps relieve that, I assume.
Yeah, I've had people on over 1,000 milligrams of oxycodone a day, come off all drugs, and no pain. And the problem, I used to put people on narcotics like every other doctor in the 90s. I actually thought it was the right thing to do. We were taught to do that. And what happens at about 100 milligrams of morphine per day, the nervous system becomes very sensitized. In other words, it changes the actual structure of the nervous system, and you become very hypersensitive. And so none of us have a moral issue with narcotics, et cetera. And, of course, there's some talk about using the marijuana-type drugs also, which actually may have some merit. But, yeah, if we had a drug that worked without all the devastating side effects, that we would love to use it. We're not against drugs at all. But the trouble is the long-term side effects have been devastating.
Nothing worse than chronic pain. It is just constant. It is nerve-wracking, literally. And, you know, it just changes your personality. People can't concentrate on being themselves if they're in chronic pain.
No, it's really horrible. And then, you know, generally speaking, for the neurological diagnosis, you cannot find a test that is positive. And so you go from doctor to doctor to doctor. And most of our treatments, by the way, are aimed at a structural solution, and they just don't work. And so you get your hopes up, you get your hopes dashed, you get your hopes up and your hopes dashed, which, of course, is frustrating. Then there's no way out. People don't see an endpoint after being disappointed so many times. What do you do next? So that's a horrible part of the problem, is that you're in the hole, it's dark, nobody really believes you because they can't see it. I just read an article last week about spouses, where one spouse has chronic pain and the other one just doesn't really believe it. Then when the one spouse grimaces really with true pain, the other spouse gets really upset. And the home life is dramatically affected with chronic pain. It's just a disaster on home life. And so you get that interaction taking place, of course, which makes the stress and adrenaline even worse, and it makes the pain worse.
Now tell us about the mind. Why, in your opinion, does it seem to be able to alleviate chronic pain? What is it? What's there?
Well, it's called neuroplasticity, where the brain actually changes physical structure. When I was in medical school 30, 40 years ago, we thought the brain was static, that you had a certain number of brain cells that you could only lose. What we found out is that the brain changes within days. You can actually change the structure of the brain.
And it regenerates, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The glial cells, the nerve cells themselves can grow. Unfortunately, people in chronic pain, it's been shown in several studies that when you're in chronic pain, your brain actually physically shrinks. When you treat chronic pain, your brain actually physically re-expands.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, one of my favorite stories is this book, The Brain That Changes Itself, by Dr. Doige, which is a brilliant book on neuroplasticity. They took these volunteers and they blindfolded them very tightly for 5 days. Within 5 days, the hearing center grew into the vision center. The problem that they did not anticipate was when they took the blindfold off, people had a hard time between hearing and vision. It was a little unsettling. But it happens within days.
What caused that?
Well, when people were blindfolded, the brain's going to substitute one sensation for another, so that literally the auditory center started growing into the visual center.
That's weird. The body will do all kinds of things, I guess, won't it?
Yeah, no. So again, the pain pathways are permanent. So if you want to fight them, it's sort of like diverting a river into a different channel. In other words, your brain will develop wherever you place its attention. So if you're trying to fix yourself, your attention's on yourself and your pain, you actually inadvertently reinforce the pain pathways. So what you're trying to do is detour around the current pain pathways, then shift on a non-pain pathways. And it can happen within weeks, usually I would say within 3 to 6 months. And the goal is not managing the pain actually disappears.
You cited an example where you would do surgery, and that's if there's like a bone spur or something like that on a nerve,
right,
or something, you want to alleviate that.
Right.
Where would you not conduct surgery? What would your reasons be for not doing surgery?
The data shows that the things, first of all, my book really just addresses basic medical knowledge. It's been around for 50 years. But if somebody's not sleeping, for instance, we'll get the sleep adjusted first, we'll adjust narcotics, we will drop down their anxiety, frustration levels first. What's happened now, so that optimizes the outcomes. So what we found out in this book is that if you do that for 8 to 12 weeks, I now have almost 60 patients with surgical lesions that were on the schedule who canceled their surgery because the pain went away. Pain disappeared. So as you calm down the nervous system, you change the pain threshold. And so I have to tell you, it's become very challenging making a living as a surgeon on elective spine surgery. People keep getting better on me without the surgery. And then when I do the surgery, it's just delightful. I mean, we have the best time, people get better. Years ago when I did surgery, I would do the perfect operation and people would be the same or worse, and I could not figure out what was going on.
That's got to be frustrating for you.
Oh, it's incredible. But for even, let's say, back pain, which has only a success rate of 24%, I mean, the patient expects 90%, right? Wouldn't you want 90% success rate?
Oh, sure.
Right. So that's what I thought it was. I mean, I was a zealot doing spine surgery. Seattle had 9 times the rate of spine surgery for back pain as any place in the entire country, and I was part of that group. I did surgery, fusion after fusion after fusion. And so I was rehabbing a little bit hard, so my success rate was actually 45%, which is still not very good. And when the data says it's a 25% success rate, I just said, no, I'm not going to do that. So again, with these self-directed tools, your success rates, all of us that are involved with this will observe at some point, people stick with it, probably 90 to 95% of the time, people eventually get better.
Where does anxiety fit into this?
Well, that's what's really fascinating in the research in the first chapter of my book, is that anxiety, again, is a chemical response to sensory input. So it turns out that physical input and thoughts are treated the same way. So emotional pain and physical pain are basically equivalent entities. I had about 2 years ago, I had 4 patients in a row, all middle-aged gentlemen. I said, look, if I did surgery to get rid of your leg pain and your anxiety continued at the current rate or got worse, what would that be like? And they instantly grabbed the leg and said, look, if I got rid of my leg pain, would my anxiety not disappear? And I go, no, it's a different issue. And I said, what if I got rid of your anxiety and you had to live with your leg pain, what would that be like? They said, we wouldn't like that, but we could deal with that. But people hate raw anxiety. The mental pain is processed the same way as a physical pain. But I can tell you my own personal experience, unrelenting anxiety is horrible. That's been by far and away the most enjoyable part of the project, is that the anxiety drops. And as the anxiety drops, the adrenaline drops, then the pain goes away. It's about the body chemistry.
Is the anxiety, can it be so bad that it's worse than the pain?
Absolutely. It is the word. I do honestly think, I asked a person the same thing yesterday. People have this raw anxiety, and you know, with my experience of 15 years, I developed what's called an obsessive compulsive disorder, which
yes.
makes me an anxiety disorder. And people think it's a little bit of a TV joke, but it is horrible. And it's characterized by unrelenting, intrusive thoughts. And the harder you fight these things, the worse it gets. And in the mental health literature, it's considered untreatable. And I'm fine. I'm not only fine, I'm thriving. And so, again, when you fight these thoughts, and the research calls them unconstructive, repetitive thoughts, when you fight them, you make them worse. And then you get trapped by these things, and your body's full of adrenaline, and you can't sleep. And it is just the worst part of the human experience by far.
Doctor, what are you dealing a lot here with meditation?
Well, there's three parts of change in the brain. You become aware of the problem, and you separate. Meditation is a process where you calm down the nervous system, decrease the adrenaline, but that's a reprogramming tool that's very, very effective. So meditation by itself won't work. Again, the unconscious brain, of which anxiety is a part of, is 1 million times stronger than the conscious brain. So what meditation does, it does drop down the body's chemicals, which is part of the unconscious part of the brain, and it's very effective, but by itself is not going to solve the problem.
It won't.
Not by itself. Again, it's a key part of the problem. You need to become aware of your automatic survival response, then you substitute. That's what neuroplasticity is. You have to substitute, but until you become aware of the problem, you can't deal with it. So remember, anytime you're stressed, your body's going to secrete adrenaline because it's threatened. So one of my friends, Fred Luskinson, who is another author, pointed out that the human body is designed just to survive. You're always scanning the environment for danger. You're always trying to be safe. So your body's always on alert to protect itself. So once you become aware that your automatic response is always adrenaline, always survival, then you take that deep breath, relax a little bit, calm down the nervous system. Then with repetition, your brain actually starts to physically change.
How important is sleep in this program?
It's number one.
Ah, all right.
Yeah, the entire process simply doesn't work without sleep.
And when you say sleep, how much? What are we talking about?
Seven or 8 hours a night.
Oh, boy, I get like six.
Well, I could probably sleep better myself, but it's hard to get more than 6 or 7 hours of sleep. But
it's my hours. My hours do this to me.
Right. No, it's tough. And with lack of sleep, in fact, there's a study out of Israel, which I just ran across about a year ago, they'd always thought that people in chronic pain couldn't sleep because of the pain. It turns out that its lack of sleep actually induces chronic pain.
Are naps good?
Naps are okay, but the sleep that you need to get is a restful sleep during the night. So naps are okay.
With no break, I guess. No, just some continuous sleep, you're saying.
Right. So, yeah, restful night sleep is a really critical part of this whole process of healing. In fact, I have a fair number of people that start to sleep, but it's all linked, of course, because if your anxiety is high, you can't sleep. So, again, you can't sleep, you have higher anxiety. So that's why there's never one solution. In other words, sleep might be 20-25% of the solution. Decreasing anxiety might be another 20-25%. You know, physical conditioning could be another 15%. Acupuncture could be 10%. You know, so it's an additive process.
Mm-hmm.
If you add these things together, at some tipping point, people go to pain-free.
And do you need all the ingredients to make it work?
Well, each person, I would say there's probably three or four on a given person. I had one girl who actually was taking her doctorate degree in chronic pain to solve her own chronic pain. And for her, it was around sleep, number one. Then she actually quit doing physical therapy. Then she went to an anti-inflammatory diet. And then she worked on forgiveness. You know, when you're upset about things.
And that helped her.
Oh, yeah, she's pain-free.
Interesting. Well, I can't wait to open up the phone lines next hour for you. I want people with pain to call.
Yep.
All kinds of pain. And I would guess it's almost an epidemic.
Well, I don't. So the reason why I changed the title of the book, the first book says A Spine Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain. It's actually for any chronic pain. So this one's A Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic
Pain. Could it be emotional pain, too?
Yeah, definitely.
That's an interesting take.
In fact, that's why I think this is pretty much universal. I mean, this is universal stuff. There's no human being escapes anxiety. And it just depends how you deal with it and how you mask it.
What is it, Doctor, about the spinal cord, this center of nerves through your body, that seem to be so important to all of this?
Well, just give me an example. There's 1 million pain fibers per square inch in your body. And so that's why it's sort of a misnomer that the mind and body are separate. They're simply one unit. So, of course, the spinal cord is that telephone cable that goes out to the periphery, you know, to the, like, individual homes, to the telephone lines, et cetera. But, no, the mind and body are completely intertwined with each other, just physically intertwined. So your spinal cord, by the way, is the same as brain tissue. Basically, it's an extension of your brain down to the lumbar spine. Then the nerves take off from the spinal cord.
What about music? Does that help you reduce anxiety?
Mm-hmm. See, what happens, you have sensory input. You have, you know, say you have these unpleasant thoughts or you have the pain, et cetera. So what you're doing when you listen to music, your brain simply goes to a different spot. And so for some people, you know, acid rock music is relaxing. So it depends what music is relaxing to what person. That's, again, why for some people, classical music is actually irritating. So it's the music that you connect with. And by the way, pain pathways are permanent, so are play pathways. So we did a seminar a couple of years ago with my wife, who's a tap dancer, and Dr. Luskin out of Stanford, who wrote the book Forgive for Good. And music and rhythm was a big part of it. And within 5 days, we had 80% of our participants go to pain-free.
That is amazing.
Yeah, we were blown away. We had no idea that was possible, but they shifted. So people and what we found out is that I didn't have to do anything. What happened is that the human brain developed by interacting with other humans.
Well, let me ask you this too, David. Is pain physical or mental?
Well, you know, machines don't have pain fibers, right?
Right.
They don't have a nervous system. So that's why I don't have, it's hard for me to relate to physical versus mental, because it's really all the same thing. So it's my perception of the senses. Some are pleasant, some are unpleasant. But the only place that sensations are interpreted is in your brain, right? So that's it's a hard question to answer, because, you know, our society has become programmed to think that a structural solution for every symptom is not logical. So your body chemistry changes second by second based on the sensory input. So if your body's full of adrenaline and these stress chemicals, your body becomes sensitized and you feel the pain. If you're relaxed, you feel less pain.
Fascinating work. David, stay with us. We're going to open up the phone lines when we come back. Dr. David Hanscom with us. Back in Control is his book, and we'll take your calls when we come right back.